What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Doc John 99. Say my name. No one is around you. Say, baby, I love you. If you ain't running game. Say my name, say my name. You acting kinda shady. Ain't calling me baby. Why the sudden change?
Say my name, say my name.
No one is around you.
Say, baby, I love you. Little Destiny's Child.
Say my name, say my name.
And that can only mean one thing. We are joined by our good friends from the Post Gazette, Andrew Destin, affectionately known as Destiny's Child, by my co-host Joe, who is on the golf course today, Andrew. So it's just you and I left to argue with each other. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a heck of an afternoon or late morning, I'll say that much. I'm disappointed no Joe Starkey, but we'll hold down the fort, Paul.
Yeah, we'll do
always,
the...
Always a pleasure to chat.
Yes, we'll do the best we can possibly do. And, of course, Destiny's Child is brought to you on the Fan Hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. And, of course, we can continue to take your questions. For, you know, the tough questions you want me to ask Derek Shelton at noon, you can do that at the Fan Text Line, 412-928-9370, brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. So if you've got tough questions that we're not going to ask Andrew Derek Shelton, well, now you can text him and, you know, City Limits and I will go through the list and we will pull the ones that we feel are worthy of being tough questions to ask Derek Shelton. Do you ever get that, Andrew? Why don't you ask the tough questions? Do you ever get that in, like, emails or on tweets? Why don't you ever ask him the tough questions?
All the time, all the time. And I like to think that sometimes I'll hit him with it, him and Ben Sherrington, when the time is right. But, you know, it's funny when I do get the ones of, why don't you ask them why, you know, Bob Nutting never spends any money? I'm like, well, that's not exactly my place to be asking that on a Tuesday afternoon before a game against the Cardinals. But hey, to each their own, right?
Well, here's the thing. After every game, I'm sure you ask him about certain decisions he makes in the game. You know, whether why go to this guy in the bullpen, why do this, why pinch hit that guy? You probably ask him that every single night. I mean, at some point, you know, there's some tough questions I guess you can really ask about, you know, personnel decisions. But for the most part, you, Noah, right? The other guys that cover the team, Joe and I, we ask all the questions that people want to ask. So when I hear, well, why aren't you asking the tough questions? What they're really saying is, you know, why aren't you like starting a fight with Derek
yep.
Shelton? Which for someone like you that has to be there every day, probably wouldn't be in your best interest to just go in there and try and, you know, be obnoxious Joe Blow fan guy from, you know, the 500 level, right?
Yeah, and I think that's part of it, too, is one, it's the 162-game grind of being there all the time, but it's also, you know, speaking personally, there's a lot of decisions that I frankly do agree with Derek Shelton about, and if they don't work out, then it's just the matter of, hey, your players didn't live up to it or they didn't perform as expected. So at some point, it's, all right, how can I really criticize the decision if 45 minutes before that, I was watching the game thinking, yeah, that's the right guy to go to in the eighth inning. It's a little, in my opinion, a little hypocritical. I'll certainly ask it when it's necessary or if a guy is really struggling. But, you know, if a guy comes into a game and he's got a 0.8 ERA and he gives up three runs on a three-run shot, well, the odds were that probably wasn't going to happen. So how can I really be that critical of it, right? So, but yeah, it's funny to get those kinds of emails. Certainly the comment section on the articles is always fun too.
Right.
I always like it when they go on the attacks. Those are always entertaining.
Right. I mean, there's no question about it. So, I mean, like I said, we have the text line 412-928-9370. You can Send us all of your questions that you would like me to ask Derek Shelton at noon, and we will do that. I mean, Andrew, do you have any questions you'd like me to ask you, Derek Shelton? Not that you need me, because you could ask him that, in a couple hours on your own.
Yeah, I was going to say, nothing really imminent on my mind. It's kind of I'm trying to pivot here, actually, going from Penguins land to Pirates land, where yesterday it was all about first day of free agency and Kyle Dubas and which players the Penguins are bringing in, and now I'm like shifting my mind as the morning goes on back into the Pirates realm and coming off of losing 2 or 3 to the Braves and what's the deal with some of the pitching. So I guess the question that would come to me would be, how soon would Marco Gonzalez and Ryan Borucki be expected back? But I'm sure we'll get those kinds of answers here soon. That's the thing that's most imminent on my mind. It's just, what is the pitching depth looking like as they go into July, considering how banged up that's been? And I guess that applies to David Bednar too, because he's still sidelined.
Yeah, I think the big thing that I took away from this weekend is the same thing we've taken away from a long, 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 long stretch of games. And that is, they need to go get help for their offense. I don't think that's a secret. And as I wrote in today's Post-Gazette, okay, hope is not a method. So when I hear Ben Cherington say things like, well, our guys that are here getting better, that's a much better plan than going out and getting other guys. I'm wondering if they're going with the hope is a method plan, because it's just not realistic. First of all, there's not that many places where guys can really get that much better. And when you say, well, okay, let's say, for instance, Ke'Bryan Hayes, he gets much better. It's going to be offset by the fact that it's probably not going to be the same month for Rowdy Tellez and Brian Reynolds that they just went through, where they both looked like they were playing, they both looked like they were the two best hitters in baseball at times in June. They're probably going to come back to earth a little bit, right? And so, at the end of the day, and we see, for instance, you saw it with Nick Gonzalez in May, he looked like one of the best hitters in baseball. June struggled. Probably, maybe he'll rebound a little bit. But my point is, don't they need at least one guy? And I think an outfielder, because I keep looking at this. Olivares, Sawinski, and Michael A. Taylor, right? You got to play one of them every night, if not two. If you go get an outfielder that can hit, I think it would really help this team a lot. Am I wrong? Would you be okay if they decided to go with the hope as a method through the trade deadline?
I think it's okay to go through the trade deadline, but I'll kind of hedge my bets here and say that it should not be a big name. People who are clamoring for, those really big bats, whether it's Luis Robert with the Chicago White Sox, that's a guy who's going to cost a lot, both in terms of his contract and what the player return would be on the prospect side, who the Pirates would have to give up. Frankly, this is just speculation on my part, but this is a team that's 3 games under .500, 83 games into the season. I don't think they've shown you enough to say this should be the all-in season. I understand the sentiment of you have Jones, Skeens, and Keller, and you don't want to waste that, but I don't think the entire core has shown you enough that one bat is going to be the difference between this team being a World Series contender versus, a fringe team. I think that adding a bat or two maybe is enough to get them into the playoffs, and maybe they can steal a series. But it's too hopeful, I think, to anticipate that this group, by doing anything more than getting one or two bats, would be a legitimate threat. So for me, it's, I'd look at the smaller pickups, whether that's getting old friend Miguel Andujar back from the Oakland A's. He would cost very little. I know some people would be upset about that and say, well, why didn't he get a chance here last year? But where I stand on that is just, this is not the team, in my opinion. This is not the year to go all in. This is the final year, in theory, of the rebuild, which I know is frustrating, I'm sure, for a lot of people to hear. But I don't think this team has shown you enough that you should go all in with it.
So what kind of moves then? I mean, what's the guy from the Marlins? Not Josh Bell. To me, I have no interest in Josh Bell. I did for a little bit, but then I looked at really who he is and what he is, and I just don't know that he really is. But the outfielder that people had talked about from the Marlins as part of that Josh Bell deal. Who was that again?
Brian De La Cruz.
Yes. How about a deal like that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's another one that it's fine. I mean, you can go out and get that kind of guy, and that's all right. But the reality is that knowing where this Pirates team is at and knowing what the reality is with some of the guys they have on the payroll, like, I wouldn't be surprised if you add a bat like a Brian De La Cruz, who, correct me if I'm wrong, does have a few controllable years left. I'd have to check myself on that. But that would probably have to come in conjunction with something like, okay, Aroldis Chapman, who's making $10.5 million this year, you'd probably like to move him because it's going to be a little bit of this, a little bit of that. It's not going to be – I would be really surprised if this deadline is an all-in surge to become a better team across the board and really load up. I think it's okay to add, but I think it's also okay to subtract in small ways. So that might mean, okay, one of Marco Gonzalez or Martin Perez gets traded. Maybe an Aroldis Chapman gets dealt. Maybe you see if anybody is a taker for a catcher like Yasmani Grandal as a true backup. Or just organizational depth, the way that Austin Hedges was traded last year to the Texas Rangers. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a little bit of both. You can add, you can subtract, but I don't think this is going to be a team that's all in 3 or 4 weeks from now.
Brian De La Cruz has 1, 2, 3 years of arbitration left.
Yeah.
After this year. This is his last pre-arbitration year. So obviously the Marlins are trying to shed him before his salary starts to explode. Is that is that why he's on the market?
Yeah, I think so. And also just because he's not a true franchise cornerstone guy. And this is a Marlins team that, as evidenced by their record, they're truly a team in flux. Like, they are, they've got a few more rebuilding years ahead of them. So I think they're looking at is this guy going to be here in 6 years? Probably not. So let's trade him right now while his value is as close to an all-time high as it's been.
Yeah. I mean, you have 15 home runs and 40 RBI, 242, 289, 426, 715 OPS. I mean, he obviously would be an upgrade over the three guys that I mentioned.
Right. At least on the offensive side. Right. The question there is more just the defensive end is that, and that's not me saying, like, I wrote about this much, that Jack Suwinski has arguably been the worst defensive center fielder in baseball this year. Like, certainly Brian De La Cruz would be a defensive upgrade over him wherever you put him in the outfield. But, you know, Michael A. Taylor, to his credit, despite having a woeful season on the offensive side, has been an elite defender in center. So I think the plan there would be you would pair whatever the outcome is there, whether that's moving Brian Reynolds back to center, whether that's getting a guy who can play a decent-ish center field who has a better bat, and then you use Michael A. Taylor as a late-game replacement. Like, I think there's a combination there that you can do. But I'm with you, Paul. I mean, outfield bat is 100% the number one priority, I think, for this Pirates team going into the deadline.
Well, I think that's the biggest thing to me is that if you went and got an outfield bat and you played Oliveras in right and played whoever you bring in center, and Reynolds, obviously, you'd only need to use Michael A. Taylor as a late-game defensive guy and Suwinski as a left-handed pinch hitter off the bench. And I think that would be an upgrade. Would you agree with that?
I mean, I would go a step further and say, if Jack Suwinski's not playing every day, he should go to the minors. Like, and I know he's not technically playing every day right now, that he's divvying up reps with Michael A. Taylor in center. But, I mean, personally speaking, Joshua Palacios has finally gotten hot. He's finally healthy in Indianapolis. I know I've beat the drum for him a few times, but I genuinely do think that it's almost time for him to get back up here and then send Suwinski down to the minors, especially if they do make that kind of move for a guy who can play 4, 5, 6 days a week in center field. At that point, it's a disservice to Jack to not be playing him every day. I think he would benefit much greater by having him in the minors, actually being able to work through swing changes, some of his struggles on a daily basis, because that really hasn't happened here all season. I mean, he hasn't really gotten that many ABs against lefties, especially you go back to the early part of the season at the end of March when they played the Marlins. I think the Marlins started four straight lefties, and Suwinski didn't get a single start. And it feels like really since then, he just hasn't been able to find stable footing, hasn't been able to get into a groove for no fault other than they're playing matchups. And if he's not playing every day, he's a streaky guy. He just has not been able to get into a groove, it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that. Do you really think there's a chance that Aroldis Chapman could be traded at the deadline?
Yes, I genuinely do. I think, and it's not because it would only be I think it's possible just because of the reality that they are paying him so much money, and because the second half of the season's coming up, they could shed themselves of roughly $5 million by dealing him. A contender would certainly like to add them to their bullpen, one that's, you know, a legitimate bona fide contender. And you could get some, you know, real prospects in return for him. I mean, you look at the way that he's been moved around the last handful of years at the deadline, whether from the Yankees to the Cubs to the Rangers to all these different teams. Like, he has gotten solid prospects in return. Now, some people may, you know, roll their eyes at that and say, we don't need more prospects. But I think what that allows you to do is be more legitimately aggressive once it becomes the winter, once it becomes next year at the deadline. You have a bigger prospect capital that you can actually push for next season. Like, personally speaking, I said this was a 79-win team this year. I never perceived them to be a playoff team, and I understand why they did the Aroldis Chapman signing. It was, hey, maybe this team is ready. Maybe they're a little bit more ahead of the timeline than we originally thought. But you can sell off Chapman. You can get somebody legitimate in return or a couple of prospects, and that can help you better for next year, the winter, et cetera, where you can really go all in and on a push for 2025.
I will say this. So if that's the theory, you know, that we're going with.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Then Perez and Gonzalez both need to be gone.
Yes.
I mean, if that's the theory, we're going just trying to, you know, stock up, you know, to build up your, you know, to really go for it next year or whatever. I mean, to me, you have to look at, and Grandal as well, like you said, if someone's willing to, you know, if someone needs a backup catcher, you know, try and get something small for him. You know, and the funny thing is, if you trade those four guys, I don't know that it changes much about your team. You know, if you believe in the Nicholas kid or one of the other kids that's capable of being an eighth inning guy, you don't really need Chapman. Perez has been, you know, out for, what, a month? So, you know, you survived without him. Gonzalez has been out for more than that. And Grandal kind of stinks. So, I don't know that it would be received very well, though, you know, Andrew. I just think that if you're going to sell, it really wouldn't be received very, very well. Even if you could make a logical case like you just did.
Right. And I think that's the point, is that it can be selling while also buying. Like, I think it doesn't have to be one or the other. Like, Aroldis Chapman, to your point about could Kyle Nicholas be an eighth inning guy, Ryan Barucki coming back from injury, a left-hander, like, he could come back in and be a solid guy in that seventh or eighth inning role as a left-handed option. I think you could move three of those four guys and then still go out and get an outfield bat, still go out and get a corner infielder, guys who are controllable for the next few years. And you're just kind of reorganizing your team, and it might, in theory, on the surface, look like a sale because, oh, you dealt all these guys with one-year contracts, but what you've really done is positioned yourselves better for the rest of the season and for 2025. So I don't think it needs, on the surface, it might look like a sale, but I don't think it needs to be this expectation of they're either only adding or only selling. I think it can be both. And frankly, I think that's the most likely option of what the Pirates are going to do, a little bit of both. And it might be, you have to read through the tea leaves a little bit to figure out exactly what the Pirates' plan is there.
Would you be okay if they dealt, you know, because he's still young and all the other stuff, a guy like Sawinski?
Yeah, I'd be okay with that.
How about Henry Davis?
No, I'm not ready to give up on him yet.
Because to me, I think Sawinski and Henry Davis, believe it or not, might have a little bit of value on the market.
100%. Because, I think Davis maybe even a little more.
Because they're young and all the other stuff that goes with them. But those are the two position player guys that I think if you're going to deal somebody, those would be the two that I would think about. Okay, you could deal those two guys. You know.
Yeah. I think the concern there is just that both guys, they're in terms of their stock right now, like it's at the absolute floor with Sawinski and Davis.
Right.
So you'd be selling so low. And not feeling like you gave Sawinski, that's why I'm okay with moving Sawinski, is you gave him a much more sizable chance than you ever really gave Davis. And with Davis, that's because of injury, because of lackluster performance. Like, he still hasn't gotten a full year's worth of MLB at-bats, and he's shown that he improved dramatically behind the plate defensively. Like, I still would be in favor of moving Grandal and then after the deadline saying, okay, the catching tandem is Henry Davis whenever he comes back from concussion, him and Joey Bart. Let those two guys run with it, and then maybe after the year you can have a more serious conversation. But I would not be ready to move either of those guys. If I were to move one, it would definitely be Sawinski, but I see no reason to move Henry Davis yet. There's no rush, especially with Andy Rodriguez coming back next year. You don't know what he's going to be like coming back from that Tommy John surgery. It's no guarantee that he's going to be a catcher again. Now, right. I'm not saying I have any inside info on that, but that's just the nature of it. It's a guy coming back from Tommy John to play catcher every day. Like, he probably will need some help in terms of reps, some time getting back up to speed. I don't think you want to trim your catching depth any more than you have, as we saw earlier in the year when they went out and got Joey Bart. Like, they needed help with catching depth. They don't have a ton in the system.
Do you still think they're a 79-win team? Is that still kind of what you project?
Yep, absolutely. If they add to it, sure, they can be a playoff team, but I think what we've seen there, just a few games under 500, they toe that line, get close to it, dip back under a little bit. I still think they're a 79-win team, and I don't think they're a playoff team.
Oh, okay. Well, that's completely taking the wind out of the sails of many people right there, Andrew, just so you know.
Yeah, I'm aware. It's, certainly it's – for me, I look at this team as they have a lot of parts. It's more just, I think, we have to go back and review it the last couple of seasons, is that last year being a 76-win team, they exceeded expectations in a lot of ways. I don't think that team last year was as good as a 76-win team, and right or wrong, it created these higher expectations for this year because, hey, you had a 14-game win improvement over the prior season. Why is it unrealistic to expect them to advance 6 or 7 more games and be above 500, be a playoff team? But there's so many factors there of O'Neill Cruz coming back from injury, Henry Davis being plagued by injury and poor performance, Jack Sawinski taking a step back, Andy Rodriguez being hurt. Like, you put all these factors together, and while they do have a lot of nice parts, but, you know, Ke'Bryan Hayes taking a big step back offensively, it's unless things dramatically change in the second half for a couple of key guys, I just don't see how this is a playoff team. I really don't.
Well, I think that's going to be you know, as long as they're still in it late August and still having meaningful games into September, you know, even if they're not really fully in the race, if they're somewhere where they're within striking distance, I guess that combined with the fact that you got Skeens and Jones going every week, essentially, will keep people interested. But boy, I said this to City Limits yesterday, and that is, it sort of feels like they're dragging their feet a little bit and sort of trying to run out the clock to the trade deadline so they can basically say exactly what you've said here for this last half hour, with a week to go before the trade deadline, and say, well, you know, we're not really in it, fully 100% in it. We don't feel like this is the year for us to empty out the chamber and use all of our chips. So we're going to probably make some smaller moves because we feel like we're 1 year away from getting it done. Is that accurate as to maybe what's going on? Because to be honest, to me, the time to strike was the last week or two. I mean, before they got into this stretch of games, because, you know, if you go close to 500 over the next, say, 15, 20 games, you're still going to be, you know what, 1 or 2 games under 500. You're still going to be 2 or 3 games probably out of the wild card. And at that point, you say, well, we don't want to empty out the chamber. I mean, is that accurate? Is that sort of what you're thinking?
Yeah, pretty much. And I think it's okay to view it that way. I think it's okay to understand that this is a jumbled up National League and nobody has really separated themselves yet aside from, you know, the division leaders. You know, you go outside the Dodgers, Brewers, and the Phillies, like, there's 6 or 7 teams that are all in varying ways kind of the same team, where they have like 7 or 8 solid players, 7 or 8 role players, and then some albatross guys at the back end of the rosters. Like, there's a lot of mediocrity in the league. So to me, what makes it such a risky endeavor to say, hey, we're going to go all in, is who's to say that 1 or 2 of those teams that have really underperformed. I mean, you can look at the National League standings, right? I mean, there's teams like the Padres that are a few games over 500, they're a wild card team. The Cardinals really underperformed up until recently. You know, they've really surged. The Mets, man, they really underperformed at the beginning of the year. the Diamondbacks, they were a World Series team last year, and they're two games under 500. They're still ahead of the Pirates. Like, there's so many of these teams that I don't want to say that the Pirates have underperformed. I think that's unfair to them. Maybe they haven't met expectations, but they haven't been so significantly worse than was expected of them. I think you could say that about a lot of the teams ahead of them. So to say, okay, two or three acquisitions is going to be the difference maker to push them ahead of what I believe to be objectively better rosters in, when healthy, the Cardinals, the Mets, the Diamondbacks. You know, I would quibble about the Giants. I think they're a really thin team. But, like, there's a lot of teams ahead of the Pirates right now in the wild card chase that haven't separated themselves that I fully believe have at least more top-heavy rosters. The difference here, what's keeping the Pirates in it, we all know it, is the starting pitching. It's the pitching. It's elite, especially on the starting end with those three guys. Do you want to add and hedge your bets and say that those three guys are going to be enough to push you to the postseason? Sure, you could, but I think that's just a little bit risky, given that there's so many teams that have underperformed that are ahead of them.
Real quickly, Destiny's Child, before we let you go, you were at the Kyle Dubas show yesterday and wrote a story about it. Give me your thoughts on what the Penguins have done or are doing, because my thoughts are they're doing the same thing they've done for the last 3 or 4 years, and that is try to be almost pregnant, which is we're going to rebuild, but we're also going to try and win. And we're going to try and win with old guys, but we also want to try and rebuild. What are your thoughts?
I think, honestly, it's a little bit more of the rebuild, and it's not going to be a phrase that they're going to come out and say publicly, that Kyle Dubas will come out and say. But he's said as much of, like, you know, we don't want to, I'm paraphrasing here, but it's, we don't want to just simply squeak into the playoffs. It's return to the team to become a contender as soon as possible. I think, you know, it's not punting on this season, but it's as close to punting on a season as we've seen the Penguins do in the last 3 years. Especially, you know, in the post-consecutive playoff streak. You know, this is just, they're adding a couple of guys who are risky bets. You know, a guy like Kevin Hayes, you know, he's interesting. He's got a bit of a cap hit, but he underperformed last year with the Blues after a few solid years with the Flyers. They moved out Riley Smith to get a couple of draft picks. I like the signings of Blake Lizotte, as well as going out and getting Matt Grizzlick, which was interesting, though, because that came in conjunction with letting P.O. Joseph go. All of that is to say, or at least as of right now, P.O. Joseph theoretically could come back, but, you know, I'd be pretty surprised if that happens. Regardless, I look at all of those moves and say, this is a lot of banking on next season and the year after that and gathering assets to be able to go more all in next year. Or if this team exceeds expectations, you could be more aggressive at the trade deadline. And they have more cap space right now versus last year. Last offseason, they spent to the cap. Right now, they've got a little bit over $4 million in cap space, so they still have wiggle room to help teams with trades or for teams to be able to trade with them and offload some salaries. So I think this was actually a very distinctly different offseason the last few years. But for Penguins fans' sakes, that's probably not a good thing because I don't think it's going to be a very competitive team relative to last year.
And so therefore, the question becomes, if you're Kyle Dubas, behind the scenes, do you go to Letang? Do you go to Malkin? Do you go to Carlson? And you say, listen, it'd really be helpful if you guys would waive some of your no-trade clauses. Could you give me like five teams that if I could make a deal with them that you'd be willing to go to? And why not? Like, why not just pull the Band-Aid off and go all the way here?
Yeah, I think it's multifaceted there. I think part of it is that when Letang and Malkin signed contract extensions to stay here with Crosby, it was kind of with the mutual understanding of all three of us are going to be here, ride this out for however long this big three can stick together. And, you know, to relate it to another sport, we've seen how, you know, debilitating that is for another franchise in the Golden State Warriors with letting Klay Thompson walk and, you know, moving him in the sign and trade, how much that's been crippling to that fan base. I think that's something that the Penguins are trying to avoid right now. And certainly that big three, you know, they committed to this group because they do love playing here and do love playing with each other. With Carlson, I can't really speculate to that too much. He does have that full no trade clause and the biggest contract of any of those guys, which makes him the toughest one to move. I don't think Kyle Dubas is much in the business of retaining, you know, a third or a half of Erik Karlsson's salary, even if they were to find a suitor. So I think it's easy to say on paper, well, why not just ask these guys to move these guys? Part of it is also they have really big contracts. So that's a big key there, is how can you move them? Who would be willing to take them that's a contender that probably is already close to being up against the cap?
Right. Well, I guess that's a problem, but that's something that should have been explored over the last 2 years, if, in my mind at least. And so now you're stuck, and that's why I say you're trying to be almost pregnant. We've got four stars who were, you know, they're going to be good. If we get into the playoffs, oh boy, everybody's going to fear us, you know? But the team around the stars is just not going to be, because, and here's the other thing, those guys are going to play the way they want to play. So all of the changes to the power play and all of the strategy and all the other, it doesn't matter. Those guys are going to play the way they want to play. They've shown it for 15 years, right?
Right. No, it's true. I mean, that's part of it. So I don't know. I am curious, though, just given the background that Erik Karlsson has with David Quinn, you know, went their time together with the San Jose Sharks, how that brought out the best in Karlsson on the power play front, especially with winning his third Norris Trophy 2 years ago.
Right.
I am curious if that reunion can bring out the best in him, but yeah, it's definitely going to be curious to see how this season goes, just with it being still a very veteran-laden group with those big four in particular.
Right. Well, Andrew, my column for today is the Penguins have a plan. I'm just not sure what it is. Is that a very fair statement?
You know, I would plead the fifth here, but I'd say they do. I think the plan is actually fairly – I think it is fairly straightforward. It is maybe a little bit complicated to get under the leaves of, but I do think the plan is, without them concretely saying it, it's that this season is kind of a lost year. We're going to see if any of these guys that we take chances on, take risks on, if they can be part of a winning solution for next year. So that applies to Blake Lizotte. That applies to Kevin Hayes. Those are two guys in particular. Can Matt Grzelcyk come back to a healthy form and be a solid guy next year with the salary cap increasing a little bit? But you're also adding draft picks that had been lost through going after it year after year after year. Now you've kind of, you know, restocked the cup board a little bit so that next year you can go for it a little bit more. And especially so as some other contracts start to come off the books, or at the very least, just with the salary cap expanding, you'll have more wiggle room to go out and actually get guys. So I view it as this year is certainly a transitory year, and that the focus is to see what you have in some of these younger guys, like a Valtteri Puustinen or Sam Poulin, et cetera, et cetera. Jackson Ivany as a defenseman. Like, these are guys you're going to give them the full year to see. Are they part of a solution who can be cheap, impactful players the way that Drew O'Connor is? Or are we going to have to pivot, clear a lot of salary, and figure out how they're going to reconfigure the team for next year? I think that's what this season about, is figuring out who's here long-term, who isn't.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Andrew, thank you so much for taking so much time, and we will do it again soon, I'm sure.
Sounds like a plan. Always a pleasure, Paul.
All right. That's Destiny's Child, and obviously brings the heat. Very good.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.